Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo.
Tonight we have two guests on our show. We have George Dixon, of course, our regular guest, and we also have a special guest, Jeffrey Goodman, Ph.D., who is the author of The Comets of God, and it's a book about new scientific evidence for God, recent archaeological, geological, and astronomical discoveries that shine new light on the Bible and its prophecies. Oh, they're both right there. I guess we can get them right here on the show right now.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, George.
How are
good
you?
Good evening. How you doing, Lila? Or Leo?
I'm fine. And good evening, Jeffrey. I'm Lila.
Good evening.
How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm doing fine.
Well, Jeff,
That's some big, heavy book you wrote.
Well, I was going to sell it by the pound, but I sold otherwise.
It might do well that way. I don't know if you listened to the show last night, but I did.
I did. And I was very impressed with you going through all that very tough verbiage. And you just went on through, just like, and you made it more real by, you know, wading your way through that stuff, and you ponder the words, so I appreciate it. I think you did a great job.
Well, thank you very much, but I the one thing that impressed me most about reading this book, and I have to admit, I haven't been able to get through the entire book. I've done a good job on it, though, I have to say, but the thing that impressed me most was the power of the impact of a comet. Once after I read your book, how devastating that. That's a mild word actually to use for the kind of cataclysmic event that we're talking about. If a comet actually hits the Earth, when it does, and when they do,
Leo, maybe if we can back up for a little bit and explain here. Jeffrey is also the author of The Genesis Mystery and The American Genesis. And what caught my attention with Jeffrey years ago, his work, was We Are the Earthquake Generation. When it was out in 1978, Jeffrey?
Yes.
And, and following in his work. Well, go ahead, Leo.
Well, I haven't. Unfortunately, I'm handicapped because I haven't read that particular work. But based particularly on this book, to me, what I wanted to impress to the audience, to the listeners, was that something that I hadn't really thought about. You know, we of this generation think that a nuclear holocaust would be the end all and be all. I will, Lila. Lila's telling me to let you talk more. All right, but I feel it's important that I say this because to clarify how the book affected me, in the sense that I had always thought, like I think everybody did, that Revelations kind of and these prophecies may have been playing with nuclear with a nuclear holocaust. But when you find out that if you blew up all the nuclear bombs at one time in one place, all right, it wouldn't equal the same impact and the same explosion that would have caused by that one comet. That 6 mile comet that hit us back, a number of years ago there, during the dinosaur period. So the evidences of that being the craters. So I think that that was the focal point for me for the book to because once I got over that aspect and realized. Of the far greater consequences of a comet impact on this country, on this world, on this planet, then I was able to see your connections to the revelation and to the historical aspects and of what you were dealing with. So I thank you for being clarifying that, and I think you did a very good job on that, clarifying that to me, and I say to your reader that the magnanimous factor of a cataclysmic impact like a comet would have. Let's say, if God forbid, a Halley, I think you even mentioned in your book, Halley's comet crashed into us. That's a 100-mile comet. That, you know, it would separate the world into, like you said, that possibly that's what happened when the moon was created, you know, from a comet hitting us. Then you mentioned other comets that have hit Jupiter recently and caused these huge things. So I just want to thank you for the information. I want to say that I follow your work on this, and you know, then and I'll let you guys take it over.
Well, Jeffrey,
if
I could interject here before you know,
sure.
I'd like to get into the book here. First of all, the book is excellent, but I think I have to acknowledge this. This book is really the parts that I read has blown me away in a sense, because what it's done is touched all avenues, I think, in my search for knowledge and understanding. And I have to back it up here for a second. In my introduction to you, Jeffrey, was, you know, back in the 70s, I was giving lectures, you know, about, you know, the earthquake generation, Edgar Cayce's work. But I have to let the audience know that what you did is that you compiled information from an academic level now. You compiled information on psychics and two-sayers and prophecies and so forth, and looked at the outcome and looked at the ramifications of incorporating, I think, some of the knowledge they had to offer. Am I right so far?
Yeah. And that's how I got to this book, because there were mistakes made. There are things that are not accurate. There wasn't a whole big conflagration in 2000 when the planets lined up. And in that book, I did have a chapter about earthquakes in the Bible. And then I wound up looking closer at the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like any archaeologist, I'm not arguing any theologies, you got to look at the Bible in terms of its definitions of words and how what it describes. And the first thing that hits, which evidently got to Leo, God bless him, is there's a whole lot of rock and roll going on. All you have to do is look at the moon, and you see all the pockmarks up there. And so we have covered a lot of...
You covered a lot, I think, in that book. But what you did do is that you offered something that the academic world was not doing. And being a layperson myself now, I did have some education behind me, but I also had the responsibility of raising a house and or raising a family and so forth. So I wasn't able to go back and did my work in the academic halls. But what I did do is that I did study the paranormal and my own beliefs in my own fashion over the years, and I've done my initiations. But what I was able to do was incorporate, I think, what you're saying into my work. And, you know, I talked about fractal consciousness. The epiphany that I got this week, I think, in thinking about this book is what you did is that you opened up those avenues that were closed. And even though, yes, a lot of that stuff didn't happen, but, you know, I have an understanding why it didn't happen. We can go into this later on. But, I mean, you know, I often wondered, you know, what was going on and what you were thinking. And then when I seen you I talk with you or some of your work, it brought it into focus. And I have been studying the Bible, parts of the Bible, over the last, let's say, 20 years in the UFO expose. And, you're pulling a lot of revelations, which I was impressed by. And in dealing with the end times, of course, with the Mayan calendar, I'm drawn toward that. But, you know, I don't want to get carried away other than, you know, I was only able to review, let's say, the second chapter of your book, and I think it was fascinating where you led me. But maybe you can expel upon, you know, the basic understandings of this book and why you put it together. And, you know, what we can do is break it down a little later on. But there's so much that goes into this, including the Hopi prophecies and some of the Mayan understanding that we've been following, Leo, Lila, and I, for the last 3 years. So, Jeffrey, I want to thank you for, if nothing else, keeping my attention, but also incorporating some of the rules that we're playing with. And my friend, the paradigm of knowledge has been broken, and right now it's an everyday affair with the Internet. But, you know, you were one of the first that got out there and hit the street and was talking about it. And Jeffrey, why don't you go and really tell us what brought you to writing this book, which you briefly touched a few minutes ago, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start, George. Good.
Okay. Well, in the earthquake book, it didn't have all the answers, and I kept looking. And when I looked at the Bible, it seemed it had another viewpoint, that it had earthquakes and it had these even bigger events being talked about. In the book of Isaiah, he talks about the earth rocking on its axis and shaking to and fro. He's talking about mountains literally being demolished. Well, some of that talk I knew as an archaeologist from reading the ancient Near Eastern literature. I know a lot of you people are familiar with the Sumerians and Zachariah Sitchin, and he talked about the Sumerians. And you got to realize that population lived in fear of comet impacts. And just as we've learned that the dinosaurs didn't do very well with comet impacts, it seems that astronomers have played the heavens backwards, and in the time that these civilizations were going, the Sumerians and the Babylonians and the Akkadians, there was a lot of activity that brought a family of comets right through and around this planet. So these people who left us lots of written records weren't bonkers. Yeah, they worshiped comets, but when you look closely and saw what they described, they worshiped one with Inanna. She's the queen of heaven. And she turned night into day, split apart mountains, caused the land to shake, set the land afire. She controlled the wild bull of heaven, Ishkor, and Ishkor snorted and opened up a pit, and it says into that pit 100 men of Uruk fell. And then it says Ishkor snorted again, and 200 men fell into the pit that was open. And then he swung his tail, and the land was ablaze. Well, myself and a number of astronomers said, geez, these people are telling us about real cometary events. And so that same type of talk and perception of the surroundings is found in the Bible, that these events that everybody likes to take their shot, like pin the tail on the donkey, this is what I think happened in the flood, this is what I think happened here or there, when you read closely and understand the words as the Bible defines them, not as we define them, surprise, surprise, the Bible seems to be a regular textbook about comets, about past cometary events, everything you wanted to know but were afraid to ask about how comets work, what they're made out of, where they come from, where they're stored. And then the scary part, there were prophecies going beyond all the psychic stuff of more comets to come, which was consistent with the Bible's basic thing, is that in Ecclesiastes, everybody knows who goes to a wedding, there's nothing new under the sun. And that which is to be hath already been. And so comets coming in. And so we drop man out of the equation in that all this nuclear stuff, none of it is big enough to do the things that the Bible is talking about.
That impressed me so much. But, you know, getting back to the comet aspect to it was what brought something amazing home to me was relating it to the Hopi prophecy. And the Hopi prophecy stated that in the end time, the last prophecy that has not been fulfilled was the presence of the blue star. Right?
Yes.
Once the
blue spruce Kachina dances, and then there's a star.
And if you go into, if you go back into the ancient, you go into some of the theosophical channelings and prophecies and so on of Blavatsky and other researchers, they talk about Manu, which was the mother, which is the which is the breath of life, all right? And then Manu, who was the was birth, was the masculine, was the god that we know now, or the god that we, the masculine god. And actually, what happened in that period is that when they, she gave birth to Mana, and he devoured his mother. Okay, it was a cannibalistic kind of a ritual thing, I don't know, but whatever it was, is he brought light, okay? And by bringing light, it became, you know, the sun and the Big Bang, and he created the heavens and all the universes.
And the blue star.
But it also came from a basically a Big Bang, you know, concept. But we got light was through his manifestation. But what confuses me a little bit was the introduction of a masculine god by Abraham, okay, and the Jews, and of course carried down to Christianity and into Islam. But the presence suddenly of the manifestation of suddenly a male god appearing, a male god of the universe. Of creation appearing out of over a period of no more than maybe an inkling of time in the course of human existence, that suddenly through Abraham it appeared and he spoke and there was a masculine God. When prior to that, the Jews and everyone else believed in a female energy, in a feminine God, in this Inanna. Goddess, and all the pagan religions referred to goddesses, not gods, and the goddess as the supreme creator. So, how do you, how does God suddenly become a man? All right, all of a sudden, without any real historical. Any really long-term historical perspective to it? I mean, he just suddenly appeared to Abraham.
Amongst those groups, which is, let's just call them, they were Akkadians. They were Semitic people living amongst the Sumerians, who are more or less leaning towards Turkish. they all worshipped the mother goddess, and you're right, it was Inanna. She was queen of heaven. She was in charge of heaven and earth, controlled everything, in charge of fertility. And then in the Bible story, it tells us about Abraham and he, God introducing himself and starting to show them that not Inanna is not the queen of heaven, but he is the creator in charge of things. And he does it in a very clear-cut way in the Bible. I mean, for example, in Isaiah, he says, ask me of things to come. Ask me of things concerning my hands. Ask me, because I've created it. He says, ask me about the things that you see around you. He says, I control them and I control the host. Now, here is the key word, the host. The host just means army. But in Deuteronomy 4:19, the Bible explains the host are the objects of heaven. So we're on the same wavelength now as these ancient societies that they worship the host of heaven. And God said, don't do that, he says, and that's the situation with Abraham. He says, I'm in charge. And he proceeds to demonstrate that to Abraham because we remember when Abraham was asleep, he passed a burning lamp between the sacrifice, which could be translated as a meteorite. And then when he chastises or punishes Sodom and Gomorrah, this seems to be another cometary event. And even as Inanna is in charge of fertility, we have Inanna, you know, the Jews were worshiping even later into time, late Old Testament, they were still worshiping Inanna in secret places, it's talked about. But he says he's in charge of fertility, and lo and behold, Abraham becomes a dad at a very far old age. So, I mean, who's the real fertility person in charge? So he's trying to explain himself to man, going from what is known and believed, from the known to the unknown, from the simple to the complex. And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, you have a series of events where he's interacting with man, and it's hard to make comment on a lot of this, but on the big events, on the things that we could mutually observe, in other words, as he said that a certain place was destroyed and there's a flood, we should find physical evidence of a flood. If he said Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed by fire, we should find evidence of these things. And so what I did in my research is I went back and picked up the astronomy, looked at the ancient records, and there was a match up there. There is evidence that now, in the last 10 years, the last 5 years, the last year, that we have two craters, one in the Indian Ocean called Burkle Crater, and you could Google it. And here we have the real cause of the flood, because it's an 18-mile in diameter crater. They found the mile below, 12,000 feet, excuse me, below the sea, and it sent out tsunami deposits. And they were in India, in Australia, in Africa, and the Holy Land, the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, is straight to the north, and a tsunami wave a couple of miles high running up there, the only thing to stop it would be the mountains of Ararat. And I think everybody knows the story. Noah's boat stopped on the mountains of Ararat. And indeed, at the base of that mountain, there's a lake called Lake Van, and Lake Van has evidence that it has ocean deposits, material from the ocean in it. So now we could do like what I like to call biblical CSI. We can go back and see, okay, this is what the Bible says, what really happened, what evidence do we have? And in this book I try to show that there is evidence, it's just that no one has actually looked for it, and that we have shortchanged the earth. When you, as I said, you look at the moon, it's a shooting gallery, these events take place. And one of the messages that the God of the Bible is telling man, he says, I'm in charge of everything, and one way we can make mutual observations is when we have these big catastrophic events. The nervous thing is, he says, more are going to come during the so-called end times. And what is described in Revelation is just this, that it's not a mishmash of different things, but when a comet comes in and hits, it could bust up hitting the atmosphere. That would have certain effects about sky burning and people being burnt. If it hits the planet itself, the Earth, there is a crater. If it hits the ocean, you have a tsunami. If it hits a river system, you've got poison waters. So I think you got the thing. What we have here is a treatise of what happens when comets come in to impact the planet.
Jeffrey, if I can interject here for one second.
Sure.
You know, I want to come back and talk about an event that happened in 2007. But when I was talking before about the epiphany that I had, it was, you know, I've heard all the same story before, yada, yada, anna this, yada, yada, anna that. And I think there's a parallel line in this paradigm and for what the illusion that we have been taught is, you know, the aliens and how the comets and so forth played so much of their stories. And, you know, I could talk about Anna and Anu and how Hulala, who was part of that problem with Tiamat, that was a planet that was destroyed between Jupiter and Mars. I don't want to get into, you know, the gist of it other than, you know, it was all related to power and everything was little and Enki in our tales of our Bible. But, you know, I always looked at them as personal beings and not as natural events like the cataclysms. So on that note, you know, I want to say that, you know, I haven't learned anything yet. And my problem is I think I know too much, but I don't know anything at all. And I think in 2007 we had a comet, I think it was a comet Holmes, that came into our atmosphere or came into our solar system. And once it came in, it exploded, and it created a blast that left a blue a hue, a field around it, larger than the sun. Do you remember that happening?
I know of it. It broke up, and it shows you that, it's, you know, we like to think comets occur, oh, once every million years.
Yes.
We're safe for another 999,000. But no, when we saw the comet, Shoemaker-Levy hit Jupiter, there were 23 impacts in the space of a month. And
amazing,
Holmes,
huh?
And others come in, and they bust up into 6, 8, 9 pieces. And in a short period of time, if things went wrong, you could have a series of impacts. We now realize that Jupiter, we thought it only got hit by small stuff every kind of month or so. This past month, there have been 4 little hits. So things are going on. Things are flying by. It's literally, it seems, this planet has lived under a lot of grace for the last few thousand years since biblical times.
The Mayans talk about at that time, or the Hopis prophesize, that's the time of the end, start of the end times. And they say the end time window was open between 2007 to 2015, which, you know, I think everything falls in line with what they've been saying about this alignment within our galaxy, in our galaxy. But I think some of this has a lot to do with our understanding of the precession of the equinox that is flavored through all organized religions, in fact, even the Hindus and so forth. But if I can just add,
I think the alignment aspect is significant, George, in that if the alignment is such that it centers the Earth with the center of the universe, okay, or the galaxy, and all the planets aligned and so on and so forth, what that would do is create an unusual gravitational field, I would think, that whatever is protecting the Earth now, all right, from these stray comets, okay, like Jeffrey said, I think we've been graced for the last 2 or 3 thousand years or so, that we haven't had any major cometary action.
Well, Jeffrey, if this is, let's say, the prophesized purifier that the Hopi have been talking about, there's also the red star that is attached to that, but it is a sign of the times. And I'm saying, is there anything in the Bible and Revelations that you can identify as possibly being wrapping up some of this involvement in the end times we're going through?
And maybe you could explain, too, in that, Jeffrey, possibly, how explaining how the moon was created through a cometary impact. And how other moons are created, and the possibility of the moon actually falling, okay? I think you bring that into, because doesn't it say in Revelation that the moon will fall from the sky?
No, the stars will fall.
The stars.
Stars being the biblical definition is any luminous body. That's why we have hairy stars, comets, shooting stars, meteorites, wandering stars, planets. See, we got to use the words the way they were used then, not the way we use them today. So stars will fall from the sky. We can't be hit by stars. It would be face powder. But stars, in referring to comets or asteroids, yeah, they could fall from the sky and we can be pummeled. And sometimes you could have small, relatively small pieces in a tail that are just, you know, basketball size and be hit with a great number of fragments.
Well, I think that you talked about that when you described the comet, what a comet actually is, and then
yeah,
related it to the imagery of the Revelations where you had
here I don't want to upset anybody, but I I've studied this for a while, and I've looked at it from a lot of different viewpoints, and God bless the Hopi, God bless these groups. They all have something to say, and they all have their viewpoint. And in the opening page of the book, everybody's entitled to their own viewpoint, but not their own set of facts. And what I found in the Bible is a set of facts that the author of the Bible, working through men, knows comets. He's proven himself by telling us about past events that we've never thought had anything to do about comets, and now there's evidence that it was comets. And then he gave a series of prophecies about future events. And when you look at them, they make sense about comets. Even when it talks about out of their mouths came fire, smoke, and brimstone, and with their tails they do hurt, and their power is in their tails. What's that all about? Well, comets have vents when they're outgassing. through which comes fire, smoke, and brimstone. And they have tails, we know that. And their power is in their mouths. When you pass a lot of emerging gas out of an orifice, that's a jet, so the power is there. And so what I'm trying, and what I observed, and what surprised me, is that the God of the Bible knows comets. The God of the Bible says he's used comets, and he'll use comets again, and that he knows comets. So all these other groups could put in their 2 cents, which is nice, but, you know, if you go to the racetrack and one guy keeps picking race after race after race after race, and they're now here at the 100th race, I'm going with the guy who picked the first 99 races. So what I am seeing, and what has stunned me, even when I was doing this, as a good excuse of why it took so long, is that the God of the Bible knows comets, and he is demonstrating this because man started worshiping a cometary God. And God is taking man where he is, where he's come from, and he's going on a neutral playing field, the heavens. Everybody could see it. You don't have to read a technical paper. If you got a schedule events and they start coming about the way he does in Revelation 8 and 9, then, you know, how much do you want the glass to be half full or half empty? And so if they, you know, in Egypt during the plagues, you know, Pharaoh's magicians finally says, uh-oh, this is the finger of God. So this is what God has put before man, and all I've done is come along and just unravel the words from preconceptions and biases and realize that we have a situation here. And it's not my voice. I have adapted this and used it to try and understand the Bible. But if you go to your library or bookstore, you'll find tons of books now. I mean tons. I mean 20, 30, 40 books written by real astronomers saying, wow, we've got a problem with comets. If you go to the History Channel, same thing. We've got a problem with comets. Life will end as we know it as a result of comets. So isn't it amazing? For the first time, science and the Bible are in agreement about how life will come to an end.
Now, here's my question to you on this, and it's the question I had from the beginning because it wasn't really clear. Do you believe in the God of Abram and Isaac and...
Yes.
All this, or do you believe that, that you know, the comets are just a haphazard thing?
No, I believe he controls them. He says he controls them. That's the point of the book. I have tons of passages where he says, I call them, they come in a day and an hour and place that I said. He says, I use them as my weapons of wrath, my mighty warriors, my ministers of flaming fire. It seems like the God of the Bible is making clear he's in charge of comets and he uses them for correction and for judgment. And so as we see the track record so far, everybody's got to make a personal choice about how much they need to see.
In the final days, under the Hopi, and also under the Christian and the Muslim and all of the faiths, but there will be a choice. Okay, as there's a choice in this world, there will be a choice into the next, and according to Hopi, and I keep going back to that because it's the most vivid, is the blue star. When the blue star lights up the whole skies and night turns into day, then people will have the choice to go to that star, to accept that star and rise to that star, or to revert back to the red planet, which they call this. All right.
Okay.
Now they supposedly have the choice, but the only thing, the vagueness about that particular prophecy is the description of the red planet. Mm. Now the red planet, there's two in this solar system that we know of. The red planet would be Mars, or the red planet would be the Earth under extreme fire, you know, and under devastation and so on. The entire planet would be a globe.
Or there are other options on this too, you know.
What is that?
Maybe the red star is the moon.
It can turn red if you get enough dust in the air, just like you see a red sun. But here's the thing you've got to realize.
You're right that, you know, but I'm saying it doesn't matter what story you're saying. Does it matter which
one? Yeah, it does, because here's the problem. I'm talking from records that existed 3,000, 4,000 years ago in terms of the Sumerians and Akkadians. and then the biblical material going back almost as far. It's set in stone. They have libraries. They have multiple copies of these works, and they're there. Now, when we come along in time, you'll notice something, that the conquering group puts their church where the other church was. The conquering group adapts their myth to the other myth. As it is, the Akkadians, when they conquered the Sumerians, adopted their religion lock, stock, and barrel. They switched around and adapted Inanna. They called her Ishtar, and they've run her forward through a number of great empires in the ancient Near East. So now is the original, and remember, you're preaching to the choir here. I did a book called American Genesis, which a lot of people thought was an okay book about Native Americans and Native American origins. I'm very familiar with the Hopi material. But is it original? Can I go back and see any written records that say this? Or did some early missionaries tell them revelation, this, that, and the other, and they adapted these stories? Because I'll tell you one thing, you know, I'm now talking about comets. Everybody and his brothers got comets coming at the end. I mean, Islam has talked about a comet announcing the coming of the Mahdi, the Hopi. Everybody's got a comet. But my question is, I have a chapter in the book, like 15 things the Bible said first. Does anybody else have 2, 3, 4, 5 scientific things that they said before science was around? See, show me your credentials. Show me something to show your credibility, or are you just playing off of that? You see, we've got to realize Christianity. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I understand what you're saying, but you see, I'm saying, does it matter at this point? Because people are going to think, you're right, but it's the paradigm that we're playing with, that, you know, somebody else has a different perspective of that. But that doesn't mean that their view is not right. You know, understanding quantum physics and so forth, everything is happening at once. I mean, every thought or every bit of consciousness is being played out. So I'm not saying that you can't break it down, the polarity of that, but understand it's in the polarity of both sides of it to make it for what it is. And my point is that I'm hearing the same story, but put in different words and through different texts, and it's the same story.
So now the author says to you, when I go through in detail Revelation in 8 and 9 and all that excruciating detail of things, read a little closer, my dear, because you'll see amazing matchups, point after point.
You're right.
Where
you're,
you should, a reasonable man should at least say, wow, I'm impressed. So now, do you want to be standing on the middle of the train tracks when this particular book says, don't be there?
Jeffrey, if I can keep this point here, you are right, and part of this epiphany this week is understanding revelations and the bottomless pit and so forth. I never thought of them as being comets, my friend, because since, let's say, about 1988, the understanding of extraterrestrials and how the revelations was talking about the aliens, how they're going to inhabit the earth. And I'm just saying there's consciousness connected with that. So I'm not saying...
Oh, yeah.
I'm not judging...
But remember, there are two forces out there. When you say there's consciousness, is this good guy consciousness or is this bad guy consciousness?
It's both. It's both. Okay. And they both are being played out. It's whatever side you want to take is going to manifest for you. Because that's
the
illusion.
For me, as a scientist, whoever puts the meat on the table, I'm going with them.
Okay.
And
all
so
right.
If I see a group keep on hitting the mark, point after point after point, I'm inclined to lend my ear in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I?
But that's why I write the book, and then you read it, and some people say, you know, and other people say, hey, okay, I'll learn more. That's how I got to this point.
I hope when people do read this book, Jeffrey, they're intrigued by, you know, what you're saying. It's a great book. I'm looking forward to digesting this. But, you know, I'm not going to do it in a night or two.
Can't be done.
Know, I'll take a book, and like Linda Cantrell's book, The Greatest Story Never Told. I started for that as a summer reading project, which lasted three years. But that's okay.
You can go to my website, which pertains to the book, thecometsofgod.com. thecometsofgod.com, yeah. And you can see what others have said. I've got some prominent theologians who said, wow, after reading a couple of chapters of this, it's a whole new ball game for me. I've had historians say, hey, this is not bad stuff. And so, you see, reasonable men can come to reasonable conclusions about the same thing. See, God in the Bible says, hey, let's reason together. So now I'm putting out some stuff. I'm not telling you what to do or believe or anything. This is just this document that we call the Bible has been passed to us. Let's look at it in its own terms, use its own determinants about how we prove things. You got to have two or three witnesses. You got to sow, you know, you reap what you sow, and apply all those rules, which, frankly, I don't see in other books about the end times, and see if it stands up to the test. Because one misimpression goes, I know you got a lot of Christians out there hitting people over the head with Bibles, but in the Bible itself, God says, check me out. Test me. See if I don't say the right things.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
Right. In the Bible, that's true. But also in the Quran has remarkable explanations.
And when was the Quran written?
Of extraterrestrial activity as well.
Ah, well, but wait. I'm playing the anthropologist now. When was the Quran written?
Between 400 A.D. and...
okay, so now we have a society that's a little downtrodden. Jews are doing okay in the Holy Land. Christians are doing okay in the Holy Land. And we need a perk-me-up, and now we have a Quran. And they adopt the early saints and founding fathers of the thing. See, in other words, I am interested in original recipe. And the original recipe is the one that should carry the weight, because not only is it said it first, and therefore it didn't copy from somebody or adapt from somebody, but in this case, what I try to show in the book is there's a lot of original material that we have only now in the last few years been able to see. Hey, the Bible said it first. Bacteria is discussed in the Bible. Different types of comet activity is discussed in the Bible. The Oort cloud. Our solar system is surrounded by a cloud of comets. It's called the Oort cloud. We didn't realize that until 1948. If you want Hopis or that, God bless you, I have no thanks, but show me the Oort cloud. Show me an understanding of what comets are made out of. The Bible calls comets the water beds and water skins of heaven. Show me stuff like that that I could take into a university and sit down with reasonable guys, and they say, yeah, okay.
Jeffrey, I will say this. In 1978, Dr. Crick, who was acknowledged in his scientific paper, acknowledged that life forms did come from comet material, water, and so forth, from outside the Earth. All right, now, science acknowledged that at that time. I'm saying that if you take a look now at some of the latest technology that we have, that we are designing life forms, and the only way we can tell them from as being artificial is because of the water markings in identifying, you know, the patent rights on this process and so forth. But, you know, it's the Blade Runner all over again. But this is part of our science and other knowledge. But yet the general knowledge or general knowledge to the people, they don't understand this. And they can't, first of all, comprehend the idea that life came, you know, from outer space. But here's scientific proof that we knew about it, but of course we didn't propagate it. But now it's coming out in its own fashion, and you know the Bible code is just another example of looking at that Bible. And I mean, I'm not saying it's looking at the Bible differently than what you're doing, but I'm saying it's another tool that we're using to interpret the knowledge. And I'm saying, does it matter which knowledge? Because if you take a look at Islam, Christianity, it's the same Father, it's the same principle, and the principle of salvation, because these three gods offer the salvation that man needed at the time. And that basically is the binding element, that we are all the same.
Well, my question...
Not quite.
Okay, all right. You're right, Jeffrey.
There's a little catch, which would get me in trouble. I don't discuss it or in the book, but there's a little problem that we have, which is a theme of the Bible, which is called sin.
Okay.
And being I was a card-carrying, I'm a card-carrying member of that club, we have a problem with if there's a God out there, you got to figure out how to get in front of him and get free of it. Yeah.
Right.
Guys, can I just say something? If you bring in Hawkins' new theory of that you know, there is no God because essentially it's all gravity, right?
Yeah.
Gravity creates the big bangs and it creates the cosmos.
Yep.
Right?
There's only one problem with Hawkins when he does that.
Right. What's that?
And you could literally evolve any form you want. The Earth is about a billion years too young for all that to take place and all this mass and statistics that they want. In other words, there's times when the Earth puts it in gear and there's great change, there's times when there's slow and then a whole bunch of change in a short amount of time, and there is not nearly enough time, if you look at it as a physicist and a mathematician, to get what you get on this planet in the space of 4 some odd billion years.
And one more thing I want to ask you this, because this to me is maybe the man's essential means of understanding anything. What he does is he personifies everything that he doesn't understand.
Yes.
You know, so by making God human or making man divine puts man on an equal playing field, where he suddenly can say, well, there's a God, and God does this, and he throws spitballs at us that are comets and kills everything and changes everything. But he's a hairy old guy with a long beard.
You've taken Anthro 101. That's how it starts.
You know what I'm saying?
But the thing is, the catch here, the curveball,
right,
is that God, as we read, introduces himself to Abraham and says, "Hi, I'm God. This is what I want you to do. Here's some tests I got for you. I'll show you my stuff, and we're going to begin this conversation between man and God now for the next few thousand years."
Can I ask you this? Because when you look at a tarot deck, which is, you know, judging the universe, basically, cards of the universe. So all the number one card is the magician.
Yes.
The first card, which is the zero place card, is the fool. All right? Now, so the magician and the fool. And the second highest card is the high priestess. Okay? Third highest card in the tarot is the mother, Earth, the mother, empress, and the fourth highest card is the father, or the emperor, okay? So what amazes me in all of this is that if you take the divination aspect of the tarot, which is very, very acute and very accurate, I believe, in the right psychic's hands, and I've divined with it as well. I've learned it myself. But the it's not so much a demonic force as it's a capturing and a depiction of cosmic forces that work through the through this. But if you take that very strict interpretation of the tarot and look at it and combine it to the divination of books of Revelation and Genesis and so on and so forth, you see basically the same cosmic forces at play here, all right, where someone is trying to create a narrative of the impossible, okay, or not impossible, but the inconceivable. And the only way that can be done is through third-dimensional personifications or depictions of these symbols or these grand symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the text, the New Testament, and how the New Testament revived all the Old Testament, okay, under those teachings of Christ, then understand the origins that he understood those origins. And no one had greater fear and respect for God than Christ, all right? He said, you know, if you look at his prayer, Our Father prayer, Hail Mary, what was it? Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name, and give me my bread.
Jesus says he only teaches and says what the Father has given him.
and just spare us.
His words are not his own.
See, that's it.
Here's the catch that connects to this book. He said he placed, God says in here, and Jesus, he has placed his word above his name. In other words, more important than his name is this word. And what I'm trying to get, you know, I'm not for everybody. Some group of people who want to wade through a 2.5-pound, 680-page book will see various ways where his word comes to the fore, even above his name, in terms of getting things right. Things that we could check scientifically. I'm not talking about certain other procedures and good behavior and things like that. But in terms of the events, what I like to call the hardware, this happened, this car crash happened, this happened, those are good openers in a game of communication. Very, very good openers.
If you had, I don't know why man has to personify everything. I don't know why he has to.
Ah, can I give you the answer? It's written in the book again.
Okay.
It says the creature was made subject to vanity. Think about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see, if we were literally made in his image, you see, we think we're hot stuff. And what we should be doing is not worrying about us, but be worrying about the Creator. In other words, if you're in someone's ballpark, eating their hot dogs, playing on their field, sometimes you ought to take a break and say, geez, what enabled all of this?
Yeah, you know,
so that's a fair endeavor.
I don't mean to put this down at all.
I agree.
Two of the most prolific movies that ever, prophetic movies that ever, that have come out in the last 20 years, okay? And then Men in Black 1 and Men in Black 2. Right?
Okay.
Which is, and if you've seen them, you know what I mean about accepting the presence of aliens don't look like us, all right? Or that we're not the only species in the universe, all right? Or the only intelligence in the universe. And once you get that through your mind, that the men in black are there to make sure that these aliens conform to the thought train of the American or the European or definitely the American consciousness or the American concept of a strange behavior or alien visitation. You know what I mean? Like we're far, far behind, I believe, in believing that. I mean, even though what always amazed me, even though we're so quick to accept the presence of angels or spirits or whatever.
You know, didn't you know it's an illusion?
Why are we so opposed to accepting the concept of extraterrestrials, which these are the exact same things, you know, that we're talking about? Presence of other higher intelligence on the Earth, either helping mankind or hindering him. And, you know, so what I'm getting at is that there is no, there's no way other than through some form of personalizing this whole thing and feeding it through our own egos.
That's the bottom line. You know, when you talk about this stuff, I'm not a foreigner to this. My first book was called Psychic Archaeology, and I went through all these different digs and excavations where they had people communicating through them, through the Ouija board, talking to them, doing automatic drawings. And I've known dozens and dozens of really top-flight psychics. And the point that you're observing, which I think is correct, there's a spiritual world out there. There's something more than just the flesh and bones that we see, and they could feed us information. And as I've worked in that area in my early work, it has been more than what you normally get at the university. But then when I came to really get into the Bible, I saw that theme being the winning theme. And the way I put it is I've dealt with some really good psychics who've done stuff on command. I've t- taken artifacts and buried them. I did it at a big conference and had some of these top psychics tell me what I buried, where I buried it, and the crowd all went, wow, and there was no doubt in my mind that they could do it, and they did it. The problem is I learned that I wouldn't want to have lunch with the spiritual beings feeding them that information. And so, again, we're back to the good guys versus the bad guys.
Jeffrey, what time span are we talking about with this? When did this part take? When did you see this?
See what?
Or experience this, the psychic realm that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, I did a book called We Are the Earthquake Generation
back
in 1978.
Would you say now that things, the paradigm that we're playing is much different than it was way back then? I mean, you had Gene Dixon.
It's different, yeah. But we didn't know much. We didn't understand certain things, and now the things and science has advanced. Not that science is an end-all, but it's given us insight to the phenomena we observe.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to realize, and I think everybody knows, if they don't need to read a book, stuff goes on. There's strange, psychic, spiritual stuff going on. But again, what is the source? Because here you got to realize that in my, as I, you know, glibly term it, the good guys and the bad guys, we're being fished for. You see, that old thing in the devil in the Bible, and he don't want you joining up with God, he wants you to join his force. And so if he appears as Paul Revere or Aunt Tilly in your room, great. If he appears as an alien when it was real fashionable and everybody see an alien, great. The, you know, the Bible says he's an angel of light. But the stuff is, he doesn't have any track record of really doing anything that you could verify or check up on. I always, with the psychics, was coming close, but not hitting, you know, the big race.
Well, you hit all you needed to hit, and you've taken it from there. Jeffrey, before we go off the air here, you want to give your email address for anybody listening to the show?
Okay. You could write me. Well, email is JG. J is in Jeff. G is in Goodman. At, this is thecometsofgod.com. It's the same as the website. The website's the comets, I don't have much of imagination. Thecometsofgod.com is the website. The email is jg@thecometsofgod.com. And along, I got another breath in you. Hey, you guys have been great sports. You've been able to bounce around and take some lumps and give some lumps. I've enjoyed this.
Well, I hope you promise to come back and entertain us again.
Oh, it'll be my pleasure.
Well, okay.
I have a feeling you'll be waiting for me this time, but that's okay.
There we go.
Available, Jeffrey.
Pardon?
When is your book actually going to be available?
It won't officially be available until January. I think Barnes & Noble has already went and listed it, though they never said a word to me. But if you go to my website, you may see a surprise there that I really can't officially say on the air, because Vicious Rumor has this bootleg copies available on a certain website.
Oh,
okay. Oh boy.
All
right.
At a severe discount.
I have to say, I'm glad if that's the case. I don't know nothing. You know, I'm saying the material is excellent, and I hate to wait to January to read it, you know, the audience out there, because this is relevant stuff right now, Jeffrey, right now, my friend. And you want to talk about, you know, the some of the religious
things. A copy of the book there, George. What are you worried about?
Got to read it.
I got a copy of the book. It's a galley copy, but I'm very happy to have it. And kept us going this 1 hour. And
keep you busy even for a lot longer. It'll be great to have you on again, Jeffrey.
It would be my pleasure. Anytime you want, we can do it. It's a great opportunity for me because it gets me to be learn how to explain things a little better to people. And I learn when I hear things back, when they say, hey, that's not right. And then I go home and do my homework and we're into corrections.
Jerry, the paradigm that we're playing in is much different than it's been in from the 70s that I hooked up with you. I mean, it's an altogether different world, but, you know, we both survived. We lived and done, you know, our own work, and it's great.
Yeah. Can I give you, you know, as you like the aliens, we have received the secret message from space.
Okay.
We have received the message from space. You go to a hotel room, you open a drawer, and it's that little black book in the drawer. and it has all this stuff about comets in the past and comets coming in the future.
There you go.
21 seconds left to tell people to call in if they want to continue this conversation for a few minutes. The number is 1-646-915-9505. If you want to call, call now. We've got 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds remaining. Okay, that's it. We're not streaming anymore, but we are recording, so I just wanted to let you know. All right?
Okay. Oh, yeah,
Jeffrey, sometime I'd like to talk about sacred geometries because I know you're
I pulled the thing for you, but I haven't forgotten you. I'm going to send you these pages that I've pulled out of a manuscript, which remember we talked about precession.
Yes.
And I was explaining to you the trick. I'm going to send that to you. It's on near the top of the pile.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah.
And that'll get
you
started.
I really enjoyed talking with you tonight, and also, in preparing for this show, to be truthful, I just threw up my hands. And, you know, you fit so many avenues there.
It's too big. Leo, geez, I listened to you a little, and you have great knowledge in a number of areas, and you brought them all to bear on this question. So, see, there's no preparation. You already, you had insights.
I was inspired by your book, Jeff, and I really was. I urge all my listeners to pick up a copy. It's well done. It really makes you think, and it brings home some really strong points. You know what I like is I like the fact that you believe in God. I believe in and this great master planner. It makes it a lot easier. And the fact that you've actually been able to bring such strong evidence scientific evidence to prove these myths, these remarkable prophecies, to me it's a great service to me as a reader and as a seeker of this. But I think for anybody out there who really wants to is trying to find reason for all of this, what the world is and how it began and how it will end, definitely has to read your book, right? And it may not give the entire story, but it sure in hell makes you gets you at least halfway or three quarters there. The rest is up to faith, I think. And common sense, but
one approach to trying to understand our life and our planet. There's other approaches, and this is just the domain I worked in.
I think you did a great, and I commend you. And
I thank you coming from you and knowing your broad spectrum that you delve into. That's very nice.
Well, sometime I would like to sit down and talk to you about my Mayan journey here. This is something I started out about 3 years ago, but it's been interesting for me. And yet the Mayans, I'm getting to know more about their culture every day. It's just following these end times.
One thing I did want to ask: do you believe that what do you believe might be the time frame for this return of the comets or this revelation?
I have no idea.
I have
no idea. It's a double thing. You know, if you listen to guys like Jerry Falwell, he wants him to come tomorrow and take you away, No. I got a lot of people that I love dearly who are not really connected in a spiritual way. So I'm not in any particular rush. The world is getting bad, but it's not exploding on itself yet, so I'm going to go with, God's time schedule, and he hasn't told me that. And I have taken a shot at it, but nah. And it says no man will know. So, I mean, why go where he already said you can't go?
But I don't think I don't necessarily want it to be the end of the earth and all that. But I do think, and I honestly believe after studying the Mayans prophecies, that we are now in a stage of enlightenment, extreme enlightenment, for many of many on the planet, and we're entering a new phase and a new era of human evolution. And that may or may not be accompanied by comets or by a disaster, all right? But I think in many ways what man attracts or a man thinks about and is what he attracts. And,
yeah, but there's more to it than that, because there's so many variables that are coming to a point right now. And, you know, it's different cultures and civilizations and things as we understand it. And that's what's concerning. Not concerning me. I'm enjoying it. And it's happening very quick, very fast.
Let me give you an input. Before I came to really deciding to focus on the Bible, I had a book that I sold to Viking called In Harmony. And it was about a pattern that I had discovered. It was a pattern on one of the rocks I found at my excavation in Flagstaff. And we studied it. We put it on a drafting computer, and we got all sorts of angles. And then friends said, geez, that's like Buckminster Fuller's geodesic dome angles. And then we found it down in Maya land at the Caracol at Chichen Itza. And then another friend says, geez, I find it operative in the Egyptian material. Another friend found it up at Stonehenge. And so this is the conclusion I had, that God, while the main theme for me has been that story coming out of the Mediterranean, he has still had special people in different cultures everywhere where he's brought his message tailored for them and their way of approaching the world, leading you, nevertheless, to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that this universal pattern that we found was an expression of that man has this, because that pattern, which got me doing that when I stopped, is that's the pattern behind the tabernacle. In Hebrews 8:5, it's repeated, Moses was told to make everything according to the pattern I showed you on the mountain. And Hebrews 8:5, the Fibonacci series is like 8 over 5, 5 over
that's
8.
Right.
It was there, and then the pattern, when he told it to Moses, was in Exodus 25:40, which is 5:8. And so, and then it says, with this wisdom and this pattern, he laid out the universe and the earth, and the Jews draw it as a tree of life, and he says, what is a tree of life? It's wisdom, and with that, he designed everything. And so there seems to be a universal pattern, and we know that early scientists, Kepler, Newton, Copernicus, were going crazy trying to find that pattern. And I think the Maya, and even, God bless you, UFO fans, I think everybody is being drawn, you know, it's kind of like that Spielberg movie where they're hearing the sound and everybody is being drawn from their perspective.
Sure.
Anyways. Poltergeist, yeah, I think it was Poltergeist. But
no, the Spielberg is, you know, when the aliens come down with Richard Dreyfuss, the ships come down.
The aliens are the fourth kind.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
End of the world or something. But
anyways.
I was impressed with the work, and I hope they continue with it and have you back on again. But I
would be, you know, basically any time, as long as I'm not doing anything else, I'd be glad to do it. And it would be nice if you think about it. I don't know how riled up the group you get, but if we got into something like the flood or the tower. My favorite chapter is chapter 8, by the way.
Well,
the
maybe
tower
that's
of Babylon.
What we'll do. That's what we'll do, Jeffrey. The next time we talk, we'll talk about the flood. You can focus in on that and relay some of the materials that you've been able to conjure up.
Because there have been a lot of theories put forth on that,
sure.
And everybody's got opinion, and they get all emotional. And then also the Tower of Babylon is another one. It also comes with its own crater.
Oh, right.
Impact crater.
Well, I'm looking forward to it now, but I'm going to say adieu, my friend.
Okay. Hey, you guys have been great. You know, I haven't done this, I hate to tell you, for 30 years.
Yeah, well, Jeffrey, I've been staying with radio. I was doing radio way back then. And I do want to give recognition to my good friend, Brendan Brigadier, who introduced
me
to you, I believe.
Yes,
he's been a good
tremendous
friend.
Help to me.
Yes, a Dr. Brigadier, I should say.
Yes.
And I knew him and his brother and Clifford. And
yes.
I respect the Brigadiers, believe me, and I want to thank him for introducing you to me. Personally, you know, even though we have never met other than from your materials.
We will.
I still have it in my library, the book.
Okay.
Well,
all right, I'm going to send you some stuff on the Maya.
Okay, sounds good.
Keep you in that thing. And Leo, and is it Lila?
Lila, yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're very quiet, but you kept those boys in line when they had to be. I noticed. I could hear it there.
I was very interested in what you had to say, and we look forward again to having you on.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
For
thank you all, and it really has been a pleasure.
God be with you, my friend.
Okay, you too. God bless you all.
Bye-bye.
And thanks for joining us tonight with Jeffrey Goodman and, of course, our
George Dixon.
And Lila.
Yep.
And myself.
Leo.
And I'm always thankful for myself being here.
Me too. And
right
I hope you all have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.